Kuzari, page 115, Golden Calf continued. Golden Calf part 3 today. And we were looking at paragraph 7 on page 115. The defense. What defense can we offer to Aharon, who Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is so reverent of that he doesn't even want to mention his name in relation to the Chetah Egel, to the sin of the golden calf? And so he says, the defense of their leaders who assisted in the construction of the golden calf is that their intent was purely to expose the sinners from among the believers in order to execute the sinners who worshipped it. Which is really, when you think about it, what Aaron was trying to do was, he knew that there was a certain destructive element, like a fifth column within the Jewish people. He wanted to uproot it before the Jewish people got any further entrenched or entangled with this group of upstarts, of rebels. And therefore he said, let's bring this out into the open, because sometimes it's better to nip it in the bud and really bring it out to the surface and eliminate the problem instead of letting it fester. You know, sometimes if you work with someone and you see problems, sometimes it's better to, or if you're in a relationship with someone and you see problems, sometimes it's better to bring that to the fore and to discuss it and see if there's compatibility or not. And if there's no compatibility, okay, let's cut our losses and part ways. But sometimes if you let it fester and you let it continue, things get worse and worse and worse and worse, and then you end up with an explosion, and by that time, there could be a much more serious, entangled relationship. You know, if two people are in a relationship and they get married, and then there's a couple of kids later, and then all of a sudden they realize that this never was supposed to work in the first place. So that's what Aaron was trying to do. He was trying to really uproot the whole group of Jews who really didn't belong with the rest of Klal Yisrael. And that's what his objective was. Now, we mentioned that there are a number of different interpretations as how to touch up, as how to explain Aaron's complicity in the sin. Chazal are also very sensitive to this as well, and Chazal say that Aaron himself, when he was summoned by Moshe to be the Kohen Gadol, Moshe says to him, Kerav el HaMizbeach, Aaron, come close to the altar. The Medrash relates that when Aaron was, God calls to Aaron and says, Aaron, come close to the altar, Aaron recoils in horror because he has a vision in his eyes. When he looks at the altar, he doesn't see an altar. He sees a calf. It's almost like an illusion that he's seeing before his own eyes. And he says, how can I possibly come close to this altar to be the minister of God when I've been responsible for the creation of the golden calf? And so Chazal are sensitive to this, and they see that there's a certain incompatibility. And we're not trying to cover this up. But, at the same time, we understand that Aharon was the leader of the Jewish people in Moshe's absence. He was trying to minister unto the people as a Kohen is supposed to do. And he did so in such a way where he would be protecting the greatest amount of the population by trying to segregate and root out the negative aspects of the people. This is the way Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi learns. This is the way that Rabbi Sadia Gaon learns. There are other ways of learning it as well. I want to share with you a teaching of the Abarbanel. And I want to study this with you together. As you know, we normally study all of our texts in English, except on rare occasions when we study texts in Hebrew. This is one of those rare occasions, but we'll be translating all of our texts today. This is an abridged form of the Abarbanel, because the Abarbanel, as many of you who have studied the Abarbanel know, that he can go on sometimes for a very, very lengthy duration to try and get his points across. So we've tried to condense it as much as possible and break it down into paragraphs. This commentary of the Abarbanel appears in Sefer Bamidbar in Parshas Chukas, where the story of Me Meriva appears. The story of Me Meriva is the story of Moshe and Aharon being told that they were going to be denied entry into Eretz Yisrael. And ostensibly, the reason why they're being denied entry is Hashem says, I'm punishing you because Yan lo he'emantem bi, lahakdisheni, that you did not believe in me to sanctify my name in this incident of Mei Meriva. And no one's really sure what exactly they did that was so terrible with Mei Meriva. The most common understanding is that God told Moshe to speak to the rock and not to hit the rock. And then when Moshe hit the rock, some kind of lesson was lost to the Jewish people. They were supposed to learn something. They didn't learn that lesson, or they got a distorted message from Moshe. And as a result, Moshe and Aaron are denied entry into Eretz Yisrael. You will not go into the land. How is that a punishment that is commensurate with the crime? And furthermore, what does Aaron have to do with it? I mean, poor Aaron, after all, he didn't do anything. He didn't hit the rock. He's just backing up his brother. I mean, he's second in command. What is he supposed to do anyway? So let's take a look at the Abarbanel inside. The Abarbanel, after quoting about 9 or 10 different explanations that are circulating during his time in the 15th century, as to what exactly the reason that Moshe and Aaron were punished was, he says, Her isicha ve'enecha, paragraph number 1, Her isicha ve'enecha kol hadeos. I've now shown you all of the different opinions that I know of, the kama rechokim min ha'emes, and how distant they are from truth. In other words, none of these reasons are satisfactory. V'libecha tashit l'da'ati. And now I ask that you pay attention to what I have to say. Paragraph 2. V'da'ati bazeh shemoshe v'aharon shnehem ne'enshu. He says, my opinion is that Moshe and Aaron were both punished. Mipnei, bavur rather, avonos she'asu im aharon ba'avon ha'egel, v'im Moshe adoneinu inyan ha'miraglim. He says, the real reason why Moshe and Aaron were denied entry into Israel is because Aaron was being punished for the sin of the golden calf, and Moshe was being punished for the sin of the meraglim, for the sin of the spies. Lo shehaya Aharon me'ovdei ha'egel. This does not mean that Aharon was one of the worshippers of the calf. Lo shehaya Moshe midor ha'meraglim. And that doesn't mean that Moshe was from the generation of the spies. Chalila lahem me'rasha. He says, God forbid that we would designate to them such evil. So now let's look at paragraph 3, and really this is the main paragraph of what I wanted to extract from Barbanel's commentary, so that we can see how he understands what Aharon did wrong and how Hashem is punishing him. Aval Aharon kemo shehisba'er bimekomo. I've explained already, the Abarbanel explains this in Parshas Kitisa, how he understands Aharon's crime, or why he did what he did. Shelo bekavana ra'a asa esa egel, that Aharon had no malicious intent in creating the egel. V'im heyos kavanaso la'akev es ha'am u'lahanhigam b'nachas ad bo mosheheina nimshach mimenu ma shenimshach. Aharon's objective was to delay the people. As we mentioned last time, Moshe had taken too long to come down the mountain. The people were terrified, they were confused, there was hysteria among the people, no one really knew what was going on. Here we are out in the middle of the desert, without a leader, with a leader who's told us he's going to bring us down the Luchos, that object, that physical representation of God in our midst. That object is nowhere to be found. Our leader is nowhere to be found. We don't know what the future holds for us. Aharon knew that Moshe was coming down. He just didn't know exactly what was going on either. I mean, he knew, but he had confidence in his brother. He had confidence in Hashem, so he knew that Hashem was coming and that Moshe was going to be coming with the Luchos. But he saw a hysterical nation in front of him of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, and therefore he felt that he needed to hold them off, to hold them at bay. So he delayed the inevitable by saying, okay, you know what we'll do, we'll make a calf, we'll put it together, we'll make sure. And what he tried to do in this process was to minimize the damage. He saw that the people had this tremendous desire for some physical icon, for some physical representation of Hashem. And so he figured he would minimize the damage by trying to make something that would minimally be near idolatry to prevent them from doing something much, much worse. He reasoned to himself that if he doesn't involve himself in their need for a physical outlet for worship, then they're just going to go off the totally off the deep end, and they're going to be totally lost. So let me try and slow things down. I'll do it in a very measured and gradual process. And that's why the Torah says, "Vayotzar aso bacheret." He tried to chisel out the calf by doing it in a very slow, methodical process, and try to delay everything as much as possible. Unfortunately, despite his best efforts at delaying things, the Barbanel says, "Nimshach mimenu ma shenimshach." Whatever happened, happened. Ulefi sheha'am lakhu miyad Hashem kechol chatatam mehem meitu b'magefa u'mehem al yedei cheret. He says, because as a result of this calf, the nation had to suffer for their crime, some of them dying in a plague, and some of them dying by the sword, by the Levite family. After Moshe comes down the mountain, he says, "Mi l'Hashem elai, who is for God should come to me," and he sends them out and says, anyone who insists on worshiping the golden calf, kill them. V'lo ba'u el ha'aretz, asher amar Hashem laseis lahem. And ultimately, therefore, there were 3,000 people that are described in the Torah who were killed in the desert. These were people who didn't make it into the promised land. And ultimately, Aharon is an instrument to bring about this sad, these tragic events. So hinei haya Aharon bazeh siba ma. He says Aharon contributed to this coming about. Lachen haya me hamishpat ha'eloki shekamo she'aharon sibei ba'anashim ha'ima sheyemutu ba'midbar v'lo yikansu la'aretz shehu gam ken yamut ba'midbar v'lo yikaneis la'aretz. He says because he ultimately was the cause of certain Jews not being able to enter into Eretz Yisrael, as a result, Hashem says that justice demands that although you, Aharon, did nothing wrong of your own, you did not commit idolatry, but ultimately you were the cause of certain Jews not being able to ever go into the promised land, your fate will be that you too will not enter into the promised land. Ha'umnam, lefi shelo haya Aharon me'ovdei ha'egel, kisha'ar ha'anashim ha'poshe'im. But let's be very clear, he says. Aharon was not complicit in worshiping the golden calf. And that's why God was very patient and didn't punish Aharon right away. I'm just filling in a few extra words that need to be filled in. He says, and therefore really Aharon is included in what God tells Moshe. One of the aftermaths of the golden calf is that Hashem says that when it's time for me to punish, I will punish for the golden calf. Now that's a very cryptic statement, but Chazal understand that to mean is that any time a Jew sins, there's a little bit of a remnant of the golden calf in anything bad that we do. Because ultimately, as Chazal tell us, what, before we had sinned with the Chet HaEgel, we had succeeded in completely eliminating the Yetzer Hara from within us. The sin of the golden calf reintroduced a certain kind of defect of the Yetzer Hara within the Jewish people. And so therefore, every time that we falter and we fail, we're hearkening back to the sin of the golden calf. Every subsequent avera, flaw, mistake that is committed by the Jewish people is really a product of our fall with the Chet HaEgel. And as a result, Hashem says that when any time I have to punish you for subsequent crimes that you commit, offenses that you commit against Hashem, I will also be punishing you for the Chet HaEgel in a sense. And that's really what Hashem was telling Moshe, is that when I punish Aharon, I will be punishing Aharon for the Chet HaEgel. Yes, Mary.
I'm curious, is there a need to reconcile these ideas with that of the Makkah of Koshech, where we were, discussing that a lot of that Jewish people, quite a large amount, were not worthy to leave Mizraim
Therefore they perished, they perished in the plague of darkness so as to not bring out their death out into the open. Is that what you're making reference to?
Right, but I think that what we were discussing then is that those people that perished were sort of unworthy of going further and leaving Mizraim and getting the Torah, and yet here we are, that there are people that are showing that they may not be worthy.
Yes, so you see, even among the worthy, there are still unworthy. Yes, that's also true. I thought you were making a different connection, and that is that sometimes when Hashem punishes people, he does it in a very quiet way. He does it in a cover-up way. And this seems to be what's happening with Aaron, is that Hashem wants to make a point of saying, I'm not going to punish Aaron together with the rest of the people who have committed idolatry, because that's going to send the wrong message. It's going to send the message that Aaron is as guilty as they are. And that's not true. Aaron never committed an act of idolatry. He was the cause of other people's tragic demise, and therefore he needs to face the consequences. But if I were to punish him at the same time that I punished all of the idolatry worshippers of the golden calf, that would send the message, it would imply that Aaron was also guilty of Avodah Zarah, and I don't want to give that message. I don't want to convey that. So therefore, v'lirmoz lazen ne'emar sham b'sof ha'sipur v'yigof Hashem et ha'am asher asu et ha'egel asher asa Aharon. At the very end of the story, it says that God brought a plague against those who worshipped the egel that Aharon had made. Meaning, kolomar ve'omnom Aharon ansho shomur lo l'sha'ato. Which means Aharon's going to get his somewhere down the road. Not now, but at some point in the future. Yeah.
Does Aaron not get scars from her as well, though? Because you were saying, had he not done this, it would have been much worse.
Yes.
So that even though he's a cause, he also prevented a much worse outcome.
You're absolutely right. I mean, he was playing a very responsible role as the minister of the Jewish people, which is ultimately why he gets to become the Kohen Gadol. So there's... You know, sometimes leadership roles, the Gemara says, the Mishnah rather, in Pirkei Avos says, Hebesenas ha-Rabbanut, you should despise roles of leadership, because the Rabbanut mekaberet et, I forget the exact language, it buries those who occupy that role. Leadership is a double-edged sword. You can accomplish great things, but in the process of accomplishing great things, you end up burying yourself, because you end up having to make very, very difficult decisions. Aaron was in a no-win situation. He needed to do what needed to be done, but at the same time, people had to die as well. And as a result of his causing people not to be able to enter into Eretz Yisrael, it would not be fair in God's system of justice for him to come into Eretz Yisrael. Now, if you take a look, we're not going to go through the entire paragraph having to do with Moshe Rabbeinu, but as I'm sure you can imagine, Abarbanel is going to give the same treatment to Moshe Rabbeinu vis-a-vis the sin of the Meraglim. He's going to say that Moshe Rabbeinu elaborated and went a little bit further than what Hashem had originally said. Originally Hashem had said, go out and send out spies to scout out the land. Just look at the geography, the topography, get a sense of what the land is all about so you won't feel like strangers when it's time for you to conquer the land. Moshe Rabbeinu went a little bit further. He caused the Jewish people ultimately to come back with a negative report as a result. Moshe himself was extremely confident in Eretz Yisrael. He had no fear, no qualms. He did it l'shem shamayim so that the people should feel a sense of confidence. But unfortunately it backfired on him. And as a result, because he was the cause of an entire generation not being able to enter into Eretz Yisrael, Hashem says, you will not be able to go into Eretz Yisrael as well. But once again, Hashem cannot punish Moshe with the same broad stroke brush of saying that just like this generation will not go into Israel, you too, Moshe, will not go in. If Hashem were to say that, that would imply that Moshe is guilty of the same sin that the people who cried that night of Tisha B'Av, the night that they were told, that they said, we don't want to go into Eretz Yisrael, Moshe would have been, the implication would have been that Moshe was just as complicit as they, when in reality he had no such feelings. He was very confident in going into Eretz Yisrael. And therefore it wouldn't look right if Hashem were to punish Moshe at that time. So Hashem holds Moshe's punishment in abeyance until a time when he feels is the right time to punish Moshe and Aharon together for something that is relatively minor when Hashem can present them with what they truly deserve. And the Abarbanel gives a very interesting mashal. So we're going to skip paragraph 4. And we're going to I'll just tell you very briefly what is in paragraph 5. He says that when it came time, when Moshe and Aaron did something that was relatively minor, that Hashem tells Moshe that he and Aharon should gather together around everyone around the rock, and that they should speak to the rock, and Moshe violates that and he hits the rock. That was the time, he says, Lo ba'avur ha'chet hazeh meha'ka'at ha'sela. That's when Hashem decides to punish Moshe and Aaron, not because they struck the rock, Ela mipnei avonoseihem ha'kodmim, but rather because of their prior sins. V'hayu im kein mei merivas kadesh keli emtsa'i badavar hazeh v'lo siba atzmit. He therefore says that it was just a means to bringing about the punishment that they deserved, but it wasn't really the cause for them to be denied entry into Israel. It was a foil. It was really a cover-up. It was a pretense to be able to deny them what Hashem knew that they were going to get anyway. And he gives a very interesting mashal in paragraph 6, and with this we'll conclude the Abarbanel. He says, V'kara lahem lefanav yisparach, He says, sometimes what Hashem did with Moshe and Aaron is sometimes what a father will sometimes do with his beloved son, beloved child. Sometimes a child will do something really inappropriate, and the father won't say a word. He doesn't want to embarrass the child. Let's say a child says something very inappropriate at the Shabbos table, and a wise parent is not going to jump all over the kid. You got a table full of guests. You don't want to completely humiliate the child. So you bite your tongue and you don't say anything and you let it go. V'acharkach b'siba ketana yilakeh oto makaraba. But then at some time later on, the kid comes home 5 minutes late from his curfew, and then you really let him have it. And he says, V'im yishalu mimenu lama asita kach al davar katan kazeh. So the kid will say, Dad, what are you coming down so hard on me? What did I do? I was just 5 minutes late. What's the big deal? V'hu yashiv lo ba'avur zeh asisi, ela mipnei avonos rishonos she'asa v'herachti lo ha'onesh ad ata. He says, I'm not punishing him now for what he did now. But I'm punishing him for all that grief that he gave me in front of the guests, and I didn't want to embarrass him. That's what he's getting now. V'chein ha'onesh hazeh lo haya l'Moshe u'la'aharon al mei meriva levad. He says, therefore, the punishment to Moshe and Aaron was not just for what occurred at mei meriva. Ki ha'onesh haya be'etzem ve'emes al masha asu kodem lazeh. They were being punished for what they had done previously. In the case of Aaron and Moshe, it was years before. V'chedei l'chasos aleihem v'lachus al kevodam, and was only in order to cover up, to protect their honor, tala onsham al mei meriva, al asher maru divrei Hashem, kemon shenizkar v'das harishon, ki hu hayashar v'yisrim yisashe v'kol aliyos v'shei zacharti. He says it was because they struck the rock, but that's just the cover up. That's not enough of a reason to deny Moshe and Aaron entry into Eretz Yisrael for one small infraction. Now, the Abarbanel is somewhat controversial because it seems to sort of create a diversion in the Torah, that Hashem is not really punishing Moshe and Aaron for hitting the rock or doing something at Mei Meriva, where in reality the Torah says that's why Hashem was punishing them. So the Abarbanel is really rereading the story in the Chumash. But what I think is satisfying to some people who read the stories is that it seems like the Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's version of the story is sort of to take away all complicity and all guilt from Aaron completely and sort of completely let him get off scot-free. And for that reason, some people find this Abarbanel as a very important complement to the story of the Chet HaEgel. So it sort of gives us the backstory of what the aftermath of the Egel at least was for Aharon and what the aftermath of the Meraglim was for Moshe, because after all, they were part of the whole series of events in both of those stories. Any questions or comments? Anyone want to take issue with the Abarbanel? Yes?
I think it would sit more comfortably with me, and probably somewhere maybe there's some discussion, and I'm thinking about this national, if it was more, there was more of an explanation of tying the two together, the symbolism of the raw and the idol, because I'm thinking of the national, I'm thinking of my own imperfect parenting, and I've done this type of thing, but not with this type of thought, just because in myself I've built up, let's say, intolerance of the child or anger,
yes.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
but I know, on the other hand, that when I've done it, if it was done purposefully and I made it clear to the child, if they said, why did you? Like, let's say with this muscle, and then they said to the child, because you're building up a repertoire or a repetition of behavior,
yes.
That
yes.
Is disrespectful.
Yes.
For example, and recalling the situation previously, but I didn't want to embarrass you then.
Right.
Now we're together and I'm seeing it's
right.
Becoming a pattern.
Yes.
I totally get it.
I think your point is very well taken. The Abarbanel doesn't give us that connection that you're seeking. But I would encourage you to find it. In other words, I bet you if you dig deeply enough, you'll find the connection between Mei Meriva and the Chet HaEgel and the Chet of the Meraglim. You have to dig. You have to work on it. But it's an excellent point. In other words, Hashem has to. There has to, it can't just be like a total disconnect, right, between the two. There's got to be some level of connection where in some way, whatever Aaron did wrong with the Chet HaEgel, there's some semblance of that in Mei Meriva. And I think your point is a very, very good point. It's a very important point. And if we want to be able to learn from this example of parenting, we have to create that connection also for ourselves. Okay, work on it. That's your homework assignment. Yeah.
The only thing is, we want to think that Hashem's justice is absolutely perfect. And when we use a mashal about us and our kids, with us, there's also like
there's anger,
right, the straw that breaks the camel's back. Okay, the first time I'll let it go, but then I can't take it anymore, so I have to punish. I don't want to feel like Hashem is like that.
Not at all. You see, Hashem's not doing it out of anger. It's very, very calculated. It's with a tremendous amount of forethought. And that's what's bothering Terry, is that, like, where's the connection? Where is the calculus involved? All right, work it out. Okay. Okay. Yes, one more. Yeah, was there another question? Yes.
Yeah, I'm not clear. I don't remember exactly. Does the text in Chumash say that they were punished because of the Mei Meriva incident?
Yes.
So doesn't that bring up Abarbanel's parshanut? It makes it a little weaker when he's rereading upshot.
Yes, but I guess there's a way to read the pasuk. Someone want to grab a chumash behind you? If you want to grab this right behind you, there's a chumash. Yan lo he'emantem bi. This is what God says to Moshe and Aaron. Because you did not believe in me, lahakdisheni le'enei b'nei Yisrael, to sanctify me in the presence or in the eyes of the Jewish people, lachein lo taviu es hakahal hazeh el ha'aretz asher nasati lahem. Therefore you will not bring this congregation to the land which I have given to them. It doesn't say specifically that Hashem is telling them it's for Mei Meriva in that pasuk. Yan lo he'emantem bi, lahakdisheni. You didn't believe in me to sanctify me. Okay, so there's a little wiggle room. And then there's the next pasuk says, Hema meimri vasher ravu v'nei selasa am vayikadesh bam. Es Hashem vayikadesh bam. These are the waters of Meriva that the Jewish people fought against Hashem, and he was sanctified through them. So in the words of Hashem to Moshe Aaron directly, the words Mei Meriva are not explicitly mentioned. It's a good point. Yes?
But that just shows that the connection is between the two, is that they had a lack of a Muna in both of them. And like, you know, with the FAD, you should have said, you have to believe, Hashem said, you have to have a Muna.
Could be, yeah. Very, very possible. Very possible that Aaron was wrong in trying to placate or entertain the people's concerns. He should have just said, you know, we got to hold tight, hold tough, don't worry, everything's going to be fine, we don't have to do anything. Okay, and Moshe Rabbeinu also should have just not anticipated a sort of anxiety among the Jewish people about Eretz Yisrael, but should have just stayed firm in the instructions that God had given to him about just scouting the geography of the land and not embellished it at all, right? Could be. Okay, it's a good idea. So the two of you and Terry will work together on this portion. Yes, I look forward to your commentary. Okay. All right. Why don't we go on to the portion? Okay, we'll hold it here.